On this podcast, we discuss medical diagnoses and procedures. All of the guests express their own opinions. You should always seek medical advice from a trained and credentialed professional when making decisions about your own health. Welcome to the Sleep Apnea Stories podcast. I'm Emma Cooksey, and I've been coping with sleep apnea since childhood. I didn't know anyone in my life with a sleep disorder, so I decided to start this podcast. I'm here to build community and provide a platform for people with sleep apnea to tell their stories. Together, we can shatter stereotypes and raise awareness. We'll be exploring all sorts of treatment options and lifestyle choices to help you live your best life with sleep apnea. This is Sleep Apnea Stories, and I'm so glad you're here. Hey there, it's Emma Cooksey here, and I'm your host. So today I've been scrambling around getting this podcast episode ready. I've been at a 3-day volleyball tournament with my daughter, and it went well, and it was great and everything, but it was absolutely exhausting. I have a little break now because my husband is going to take one for the team and go to the next couple of tournaments. I like to split the podcast into seasons to give myself a little break. So I've just done 10 episodes for this season, and then I think I'm going to break for about 3 weeks and be back at the beginning of April. There's a big back catalog of 133 episodes or something now. So while I'm off the air, you can go listen to any of the ones that you have missed. But I will be back with another season of 10 episodes starting in April. And I'm already recording for those. And there's some really great conversations in there too. The other thing I'm going to be doing while I'm off the air is adding a bunch of, if you're not already following me on YouTube, you just go over there and it's Sleep Apnea Stories is the handle. And so I think I've got like, I don't know how many followers I've got right now, but it's not many. But we're in double digits, so it's not that bad. So yeah, on to today's episode. So today I'm talking to Pam Sheets. Pam grew up in Michigan, but she's lived in Seattle since 1982. She's a retired doctor. She practiced rheumatology for 25 years. So she retired in 2015. And essentially, Pam is one of the few people I've had on the podcast who we can really say that she cured her sleep apnea. I don't ever use the word cure lightly, because if any of you have listened to any of the episodes I've done with surgeons of all stripes, like, I don't like it when people talk about, you know, a cure as being the sure criteria where you've reduced the HI by half, or, you know, other, to me, a cure is you don't have to wear anything at night. You're no longer on CPAP. You have done a sleep study that shows that you no longer have sleep apnea, or your events are under 5. So that's the situation that Pam was in. She did a follow-up sleep study after her procedure and no longer has sleep apnea. The procedure we're going to talk about today is called EASE, and it's offered by Dr. Casey Lee in California. So I'm going to put some links in the show notes if anybody's interested to find out more about his work. Pam was in her 60s when she did this. So I think oftentimes people don't consider these kind of procedures because they think they're kind of too old for them. But I think Pam kind of showed us that that's not the case. So she says in her bio that now that she can breathe through her nose at age 69, she feels like she has a new lease on life. And you can really tell that from our conversations. She's just really excited with how things worked out for her and enthusiastic to share her story with everybody else. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Dr. Pam Sheets. Thank you so much for joining me.
Absolutely. Happy to do so.
So tell everybody listening a little bit about your background. So I think that you're retired now, but you were a doctor.
Yes, I practiced rheumatology for over 20 years, and I retired 8 years ago now.
Okay, great. And so, with your own journey, take us back to when you first noticed that maybe there was something going on with your sleep. Do you, in retrospect, recognize earlier in your life that you might have had problems, or when did you first start thinking there was an issue?
Well, I always considered myself tired. And yet people say I'm very energetic and I get a lot done. So there was always this mismatch between what my symptom state was and what other people observed. And to some degree, that feedback, that external feedback, made me think, well, I just there's something just wrong with my sensors. I must not be tired. But every year at any kind of exam or medical exam where I might have lab tests required, I would always request a thyroid test. It's like, it's got to be my thyroid, right? And I have a family history
That's
of
such a
thyroid
common
issues.
one. I feel like almost everybody I've interviewed has had so many thyroid tests.
And so I kept thinking there must be a reason, but I never really got any answers. And I would suppose most of my life I was aware also that I had some sort of breathing issue I thought must be allergies. My family does have a lot of allergic issues and sinus problems and, the point of having allergy shots and desensitization. So I thought, okay, then it must be that because I could just not breathe very well. And I was one of those people who every morning would wake up and sound like a goose. I was honking, trying to clear my nose, clear my throat, to the great annoyance of my college roommates. It's like, stop making so much racket. And I just kind of came to accept that this was it. I eventually saw an allergist in my clinic when I said, okay, all right, I'm ready to deal with this. And he assured me I had no allergies, but go ahead and keep taking that inhaled nasal steroid. Go ahead and keep taking the decongestants and antihistamines. And
Long
then,
term.
long term, years. And I got an apparatus to clean my nose, a nasal irrigation thing, and I had saline setups, and none of it made me breathe better, feel better, or seem more rested. So I think it was insidious, probably from. I really didn't pay attention to it till I probably was in my 20s and began to just recognize these things and constantly complain. My husband says, I married her and she was tired then. She's always been said she's tired.
Right. I find it really interesting how much we just make do with what our symptoms are. Like when I look back on myself in my 20s with undiagnosed sleep apnea, I just kind of managed through my life, even though really now I'm realizing I was really very tired all the time. So, did you notice that you were having to do things to kind of accommodate, were you napping or you just were tired and getting on with everything you had to do?
I think I was the sort of person who just made myself push through it. But I mean, every vacation I ever took started with me just sleeping forever. I just lay down and give in, and people would comment about it. I met my husband's family, and I remember going to visit, and I said, "Do you mind if I take a nap?" And I went upstairs into my now sister-in-law's bedroom, and I just disappeared. And she thought there was something really weird, like, "What's wrong with her?"
No, I relate to
But
that
this is
so
common.
much. And so at that point, though, you're not thinking, were you thinking that there could be something wrong with your sleep? Did you know anything about sleep medicine as a specialty? I find that super interesting because you're a doctor.
Right. Well, there's traditional training and dogma. And in my era, when I learned about obstructive sleep apnea, it really was just the big, large, overweight, short, stocky neck guy. That's what sleep apnea was. It never occurred to me that somebody who was normal weight or just not obese would have this problem. And so I bought into the fact that it was just me. I can't possibly have a condition. I mean, I considered allergies and I considered thyroid because those things were acceptable for somebody of my build and gender.
But not a sleep disorder of any kind.
Never a sleep disorder, no.
And so then when did you start to kind of learn more? Like at what point did you really seek treatment around the sleep apnea? Did you get a diagnosis with a sleep specialist, or how did that come about?
Well, I was just fortunate to come across James Nestor's book, Breath. You know, it was, I think, in 2021. And after reading the first chapter, I just thought, that's me.
Yeah.
He's me.
Yeah.
What did he do to get better? And so I immediately started taping my mouth at night, trying to be more healthy to breathe through my nose. And it wasn't easy, but I persisted
and
with it.
And could you breathe through your nose?
Some, but, you know, it wasn't uncommon that one side of my nostril would block up and I'd have to turn over to try to, you know, relieve it and then turn over the other side. So I accommodated to it. And yes, I could breathe some, but I think I was so used to not understanding that my breathing through my nose really wasn't breathing through my nose.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't always 100% occluded. It was just always, I had to try really hard, you know, to breathe through my nose.
Yeah. And so you read James Nestor's book and that started you on a sort of journey to, did you recognize what he was talking about in terms of like orthodontic treatment and that kind of thing?
Well, I thought about it and I knew that I'd had four teeth removed because my mouth was too small and my orthodontia was completely retractive. Everything was pulled back. I had headgear, but I remember it was so traumatic. I went to the orthodontist on my break and I was in seventh or eighth grade and he introduced this idea that I'd have headgear. And I was a very compliant person. I tried to smile through it. Thank you, doctor. And I said, so when do I wear this at night? And he said, oh, no, Pam, you need to wear it 24/7. And I went back to class with my headgear on. And it was probably one of the hardest moments of my teenage life. And I did it, you know, and I did it for over a year, 24/7, having this thing pull my teeth,
everything
my
back.
Mouth, my face, everything back.
Yeah.
And so, yes, it resonated with me that orthodontia made it more complicated for me to breathe. Mm-hmm. But I didn't really put it together until I heard James Nestor speak on a panel at an online conference I was attending on this thing called Feldenkrais. And one of the panelists with him mentioned a book, Jaws, by Sandra Kahn, and it just expanded on what he introduced in his book into the relationship between maxillofacial anatomy and breathing trouble. And that's where it really hit me that, man, I should try to see if I can correct any of this with some sort of dental appliance.
And so
forward. So
you didn't go and have a sleep study?
No. In fact, I resisted it. I'm like, I can't have sleep apnea.
Tell me why you resisted. It's super common. I just want to try and understand why.
Because, you know, again, the image I had from my training, my medical training, was that if I had sleep apnea, I would not just snore. And my husband said I snored, but it didn't really bother him, so I thought it wasn't bad. But you had to have these gasping apnea episodes where you would just not breathe at all and then gasp and gag and start breathing and wake yourself up. And he said, I never did that. And again, my image was it couldn't possibly be somebody with my build. And in fact,
even though you were having the daytime sleepiness, were there other symptoms that you had that you now realize were related to sleep apnea? Did you have morning headaches or...
I didn't have headaches, but I tell you, I used to, especially when I traveled, it's like, I have to have my coffee now. Starbucks was like the generic, it's everywhere, right? So I could get one there. It's like, I need to go there first. You know, I just had to have
caffeine.
You're
just relying on caffeine to make it through. I know a lot of people can relate to that for sure. So who did you go and see? Did you seek out an oral and maxillofacial surgeon or was it an orthodontist or a dentist? Who did you go and see?
Well, when I read the book Jaws, I thought that for me, the HomeoBlock device might be the best. And I contacted Ted Balfour's office in New York by email. They were very nice to respond and referred me to a general dentist who has really made her practice specific to breathing issues in my area. And I thought, okay, she's been trained in it. I'll go and I'll ask for a homeoblock. And she insisted that I have a more full evaluation, comprehensive with CT scanning, a take-home device for, you know, sleep abnormalities.
Okay. So did you, you had a sleep test at that point?
Yeah.
Yay. I knew there must be a sleep test at some point. Okay, so she sent you home. She did a CBCT scan to look at your airway, and she sent you home with a home sleep test. And what did that show?
Well, it suggested I had, you know, I'd have something. Her screening modality isn't diagnostic and or sophisticated, but it was enough to suggest I have a problem. And she thought it might be airway resistance syndrome.
What did it look like?
I'm trying to recall that. I think it was, you know, it certainly wasn't the wrist watch pat thing that I had with my sleep doctor eventually.
Maybe a pulse oximeter.
I think it probably was just an oximeter on my finger. Yeah.
And so then what did she suggest, having looked at the results of that and looked at your CBCT scan? She said she thought that you had an issue. And then what did she suggest in terms of treatment?
Well, I was a little flabbergasted because she diagnosed many different things wrong with me. And I think, to her credit, you know, she's honing in on this problem, but I think she's just developing her comprehensive approach. And so what came back to me was a multi-page report that I was had a lot of problems and I would need like $30,000 to $40,000 worth of surgery. Wow. And I would need to see two or three consultants. And she came to give me this information when she had just done a surgery on an infant who had a tongue tie, and it wasn't going real well, and there was screaming and a baby that needed attention. And so she just kind of threw it in my lap and said, "You have some problems. Let me know if you want to do anything." And so with all of that, I didn't have a full understanding of where to go. So I just took it and went, "I'm getting out of here."
Yeah.
And
be really overwhelming. I think that it's such a new area, this airway dentist realm. I think sometimes it can be quite overwhelming, especially all the different modalities that they want you to do. I don't know what yours said, but I'm assuming like myofunctional therapy and all sorts of different things. And you've never heard of this and you're like, good grief, this is a lot. So you went home and you had a look at that report. And what did you decide?
Well, I knew I wasn't getting a homeoblock, which is what I went for. And at the same time, it just happened that I needed a new dentist and was establishing with someone. And I thought, well, I'll just ask her advice. Like, I've got this ream of data. How do I approach it? And she sent me immediately to an orthodontist in the area who has a lot of interest in the airway issue.
And she told me, it sounds like you have a lot of really great providers in your area, which is good.
I'm so lucky.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. Because a lot of people listening, I do get a lot of emails and direct messages from people in other countries and also just in places in the United States, not close to bigger cities, that really don't have access to a lot of these specialists. So I think that that can be frustrating for a lot of people. So you went to see the orthodontist with an interest in the airway.
Yes.
And then what did they say?
She told me that, you know, that I clearly had an anatomic structural issue of a too small mouth and that I should strongly consider, I have to back up. Sorry about that. She insisted I get a really good sleep study and talk to a sleep specialist I needed to first understand what kind of sleep abnormality I had.
Yes. Yeah. And the severity of it.
Yes.
Yeah. So you went from the orthodontist to a sleep specialist.
Yes.
And then you had, was it an at-home sleep study or an in-lab sleep study that you had?
It was at home. It was in 2022, sort of in the middle of COVID still. And so I did a watch PAT study. Okay. And And the sleep specialist.
How did you find it? It was okay. You just slept in your own bed. And
it was so easy.
Yeah.
It was so easy. And I had more confidence in this one, so I was willing to, you know, give it more consideration.
Okay. And so then you went back to the sleep specialist to get results?
Yes, I had results within a day.
Yep.
And I had clear sleep apnea. It wasn't anything less than that. And it was mild to moderate, depending on the criteria used for desaturations.
Yes. And so sometimes they'll use 3%, sometimes they'll use 4%, and it depends.
Your yes, HI that's exactly
can
it.
Be different. Yeah. And so at that point, what did you think? Were you still at this point thinking that's not something that I could have, like we talked about? Or by this point, you're like, there's something going on.
I knew there was something going on then, and I guess I was ready to face it. I luckily, in my institution, the sleep doctor I was referred to had practiced there at a point in time in her career, and she was highly regarded, and I had complete trust that I needed to work with her on this.
Yeah. Are you a new or struggling CPAP user? Are you waking up and flinging your CPAP mask across the room in frustration? Maybe you have mask leaks, skin irritation, or wake up with a dry mouth. You might be dealing with uncomfortable trapped gas from swallowing air or hair breakage from your headgear. If any of this sounds familiar, you're not alone, and I wrote a workbook just for you. The 6-week CPAP Solutions workbook is out now and has been designed to give you solutions to all the most common CPAP problems. Visit sleepapneastories.com to order now. That's sleepapneastories.com. So what did the sleep specialist recommend in terms of treatment?
Well, once she conveyed these results to the orthodontist, I had a more, important session. And I think what's surprising to me is how well remote consultations work in this area, because I didn't actually see any of these people in person.
And it's so amazing.
So for the person who feels there isn't anybody in their area, they can get a lot accomplished working remotely.
So
I just want to throw that out there.
Even if people, we talked a lot about this with one of the doctors I interviewed recently, where even, some people, you might have to be in the same state, but even if you're in a rural part of your state, there's probably somebody in a major city in your state that you could do telemedicine with. So that is a really good point.
So, I just throw that out there because, all of what you're doing is so important, getting the word out. And so I just want to have people not feel that because they're not in my city or another metropolitan area, they can't get help. And in fact, As I said, I didn't see anybody in person until after I had all this data collected and then went to see the orthodontist, who was very clear with me.
I'm thinking you had to do the CBCT scan in person, right? At the very
beginning. I'm sorry.
But otherwise, the doctors, especially with that's one of the really nice things about WatchPat and other home tests, they really can do it all by telemedicine because they can send you that test to your house and you can just do it and send it back. So that's ideal. And so I lost the track.
You got the
results of that sent back to the orthodontist. Was that right?
Correct. And so once she knew I had significant sleep apnea, she really honed in on what kinds of approaches could give me the best result in correcting the anatomic defects. And there's only one way to do that in an older person of my age, and that is with some kind of surgery. So she wanted me to strongly consider some kind of surgery.
Mm-hmm. So she didn't. So this is super controversial among dentists right now, where there are certain dentists who will say that HomeoBlock or Vivos, these removable appliances, could potentially work in an adult, But she was not on that camp. She was saying in order to actually split your palatal suture, surgery would be necessary.
That's correct. And I, you know, part of the problem is in adults, you know, you can manipulate the maxilla and the palate, the upper part of the jaw, but the lower jaw really only, you know, grows on its own, yeah. you know, in young adult
yeah.
years.
Yeah, yeah.
And some of those appliances used to help the upper jaw make the lower jaw problem worse and may retract it further. So
yeah.
it's a really, I think you have to be very, my sense in my journey now is that you have to be very careful with these oral appliances in adults. I can only speak to, you know, my yeah. situation.
Well, I can speak to my own experience of having spent 15 months and a lot of money on Vivos appliances and having them fail. So, yeah. and I've certainly talked about that on the podcast. There's a lot of responsibility on the patient to have to really do their due diligence and really research what they're looking at and the different providers. And it can be kind of a minefield, to be honest.
Yes.
Surgically assisted palate expansion is a whole, there seem to be so many acronyms. So did she recommend different things, or she went straight to the EASE method of doing it, or how was that? Did you do a lot of research on your own?
Well, I knew that I wanted to get a variety of opinions, or at least a couple of opinions.
Yeah.
And I asked whom she would recommend, whom she trusted. She gave me a name, and I also then asked my sleep doctor for a referral, mm-hmm. and she gave me a name.
So was that an oral and maxillofacial surgeon, or that was an orthodontist or a dentist that specialized in surgically assisted palate expansion?
An oral maxillofacial surgeon was the first choice by okay. the orthodontist.
Got it.
And in part, this is because I said at this point in my life, I'm willing to travel and I have the means to be able to pursue the highest level she would recommend. Both doctors did say there were local orthodontists and, you know, variety of different kinds of surgeons, both ENT doctors and maxillofacial surgeons, who could do some of the procedures, but not all of the procedures right. that might be available.
Right. And so which procedures were you specifically talking about at the time?
Well, initially I was very excited about having, you know, double jaw surgery and MMA because I thought I had so many defects that this is the only way that I might perhaps be able to yeah. not have sleep apnea and maybe not need CPAP.
Mm-hmm. And so we should just say, did the sleep specialist want you to go on CPAP in the meantime while you were figuring this out, or she was happy for you just to go and figure out some sort of surgery?
I was on CPAP. So once my sleep doctor said, yes, you have a problem, you really should be on CPAP, Pam, I ordered the device. It took a while to get at the time, but it's the first night I wore it. I wore it all night, and I wore it every day and every night. I never took it off because...
You're a real follower. We're the same.
It's like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this.
Right. I want an A plus. And how did you find it, though? Like, did you adapt to it well, or did you have problems? Or it didn't matter because you just decided that you were just doing... Okay, so you hated it, but you just decided you were doing it because you've been told that was the right thing for your health.
Yes, and I was hoping I might feel different, but honestly,
yeah,
I didn't feel different at all.
Super common, yeah. So you hated it and you were spurred on to go and meet with the oral and maxillofacial surgeon. So what did they say about whether you would be a good candidate for the MMA surgery or the double jaw surgery?
Well, the first surgeon I saw highly recommended it just upon meeting me and looking at my outside data. And then he needed to do some additional analysis to see if I had the proper structure for the surgery. And it turned out I did not. And that my bone was too thin, and I was devastated. Yeah. It's like, what? My bone's so thin? You mean your screw can't be embedded in there? It's so thin? Like, why hasn't my face collapsed? Like, why haven't I fractured yeah. all the times I fall doing my sports? And yeah. I felt terrible.
Yeah.
It's like,
you had honed in on the fact that MMA surgery can really fix a lot of, you know, it can feel quite drastic because it's quite a big surgery. but you felt like, well, that's the answer. And then to find out that it wasn't and you weren't a good candidate, how did you feel?
It was a terrible disappointment. I mean, yeah. I thought, okay, so I do not have a chance to be cured. I am going to need to live with the CPAP, but let's see what the next surgical opinion is for doing something less. Yeah. And maybe it will help me feel better. You know, maybe I could get something out of it, because if I'm going to have to do the CPAP, I'd at least like to explore, could I feel better?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that really drives my work. Like, I think that oftentimes there's been so much with sleep apnea where doctors have always looked upon it as a one treatment thing. Like, you pick one treatment. So people are on CPAP and that's all they're doing. Whereas to me, it makes a lot of sense for a lot of people to try different modalities together and see if you can improve things. And maybe, you know, like, even if people stay on CPAP, they might need a lot less pressure because they've improved, you know, with nasal surgery or whatever has to happen, you know. So you then started discussing lesser surgical options.
Yes, that's correct. And can I give a spoiler alert, or would you like to save the result to the end?
Sure.
You know, for those people who might be tempted to turn the podcast off now, you need to know that the lesser surgery cured me.
Oh, wow.
It cured my sleep apnea. I gave away my CPAP machine to my friend who had a lesser machine.
It's wonderful.
And so you have to understand that, you know, for every person, and you and James Nestor have both said this, it's not a one size fits all. And because a lot of people choose, like, well, if I can't have an MMA, I'm not going to be cured, I'm not doing anything. Please. Yeah. You know, that's the wrong way of thinking about it.
What was the specific surgery that you then went on to do successfully? We know because of the spoiler.
Right. So, you know, it's called EASE. It has its own acronym, EASE, mm-hmm. and it is a surgically assisted expansion of the palate. But it's, I mean, I hope my surgeon, Dr. Lee, finds a team of people to take his place, because he's the only one who does this.
Yeah.
And the reason he is because of his particular qualifications, being both an oral maxillofacial surgeon, a plastics person, and also an MD ear, nose, and throat specialist, which allows him access to different places to do his work that results in better results, at least for people who have nasal breathing problems.
Yeah. I kind of have read a little bit about EASE online, but I haven't talked to anybody who's actually done it. So compared with some of the other, like, I've had Dr. Kevin Koppelson on to talk about his MIND procedure and how, like, the cuts are different, and there's MSE and there's DOME, and all different people do it different ways. So what was it about the EASE procedure? Like, how was that explained to you, what exactly they would do?
Well, I'd sort of done a deep dive on it myself, and I watched a number of video conferences that Dr. Lee had given, and they're full of pre and post surgical CT scans. And so it's really very graphically apparent that particularly if he's seeing a patient who had a different procedure, many of the procedures done only through the mouth, through oral access, can get a very large gap at the front. But as that goes back further toward the throat and under the nose, it doesn't necessarily expand under
all the way,
the nose. Yeah. It doesn't go all the way. And his procedure is basically a parallel expansion all the way back under the nose. And so even for me, I got a 6 millimeter expansion, which is, you know, what, a quarter of an inch maybe. It's not that much. It had between an eighth and a quarter of an inch.
Yeah.
And immediately post-op, I could breathe through my nose in a way that I didn't think was possible. And that was just immediately post-op day
one. Wow.
So there is something that is very functionally improved with very little expansion if you do it further back under the nose. That's right. The key.
And so what they did was they cut your palatal suture in the surgery and then put some sort of device that you were able to turn yourself. Is that how it works?
Yes, exactly. So in surgery, you already have a diastema, a separation.
So
there,
that's a gap between your two front
teeth. A gap. Yes. And the device is a metal cylinder that goes, you know, across the palate, and it's embedded into your maxillary bone, and it has two nuts on it, and you get two wrenches, and three times a week, you loosen the locking nut so that it can expand. You then turn the expansion nut, and then you lock it back on. And with each of these adjustments, you send pictures to Dr. Lee, you text him, and he takes a look and says, great, keep going, great, keep going. Or if there's anything that looks off, you deal with it.
Right on. And so talk to me about pain level.
Well, immediately after surgery, you know, there is pain and swelling in the face in general and in the mouth. I would say it's certainly bearable. And I did use a narcotic, I think, 2 days,
okay,
maybe.
So
the first 2 days. After that, it was just an anti-inflammatory.
So you said you were turning it a couple of times a week. How long did you do that for until it was fully expanded?
So my total expansion went, as it turned out, almost 9 months.
Wow.
And if you read Dr. Lee's website, he'll say expansion with the ease is 9 to 12 weeks. So I kept thinking, okay,
that,
am I
that
done
is
now?
Longer than I thought it was. Okay. So 9 months he had it in.
Right. He has had a patient. I'm not his record. I'm his oldest patient he's done ease on, but I'm not the longest expansion. He had somebody who went about a year. And so it depends on where you're starting. My mouth was so narrow, my arch is so narrow, palatal arch, that he could only put in a pediatric small device, very short device.
Yeah.
And I used that for 5 months, and then I reached my limit on it. And so I had it removed, had another one placed in the office. And that was a medium, and I went another 3.5 months on that. And you can go, technically, as long as you're still having improvement in your breathing and or improvement in your sleep apnea, by which, for me, the way I measured it was my pressure kept being lowered and lowered and
on
lowered.
On your CPAP, yeah.
Yes.
So you were still using CPAP this whole time?
Yes.
But you were having gradually lower. Were you on like an auto-adjusting CPAP or how did you?
No, my sleep doctor would have to manage that.
Yeah.
Specifically based on my symptoms of, you know, I'm having more gassiness, so, you know, I'm bloated.
Yeah.
It just feels like it's too much in my face. I want to rip the thing off. Those kind of symptoms.
You still were not a fan. And
right.
Then, so after the 9 months, you go back and have it taken out?
Yes.
Okay. And at that point, then how is there healing after that as well?
So I had a slight complication, and this is not totally unexpected. In fact, I was surprised it didn't happen earlier, but I did get a superficial mucosal infection, a little pus drainage in one area where the device goes into my maxilla. And, you know, these things are foreign bodies.
Right.
You know, your body doesn't, they're not wanting to have these things, although the mouth tolerates them very well, you still can get an infection. And at that point, I had antibiotics, but I couldn't get completely rid of it, and that's why I stopped. Otherwise, I might have gone further.
Yeah.
But if a person is not infected and they've reached a plateau, I'm breathing great, but I'm not breathing any less. My pressure's as low as it can be on my CPAP machine. Then you decide to stop turning it. You don't expand anymore. You leave it in place for 3 months so that everything heals across the expansion. In my case, because I had to remove this device to clear the infection, the orthodontist was able to place another device called a transpalatal arch, and it's essentially a wire that just goes across the arch, it arcs over, and it attaches to two braces on your molars, so it just holds everything stable.
In place. And so was the orthodontist involved with Dr. Lee, and how did that work?
So primarily Dr. Lee managed it, and you know, he really managed the whole thing. And as I said, you know, he doesn't have a replacement. Nobody wants to do his level of training, so...
Right.
I'm hoping, and I've kind of put in his ear, you know, assemble a team. Have an orthodontist who's willing to look at, you know, follow the expansion locally.
Yes.
You know, have the sleep doctor person, have an ENT who just does those cuts through the nasal scope.
Yes.
Have, you know, somebody else who's an oral maxillofacient do everything from the mouth side. Like, I really think it's not realistic to find a surgeon who does everything he does.
Himself.
But I love this procedure compared to the others. I just think that breathing through the nose is so much of the issue for so many people.
Yeah. At that point, it's all healed and you had that removed. And then how did you feel? Like, what was the result? Like, I know that you said even right when you had the first surgery, you noticed a difference in your nasal breathing. You had the thing taken out and you were all done. How were you feeling at that point?
Well, interestingly, I just kept breathing better all the time. And I thought, how could this possibly be? But the orthodontist I saw, who is very smart in this area and up on all the latest research, she actually told me I would probably continue to have improvement. After everything was done, there is something about aerodynamics through the nasopharynx that when there's so much restriction and increased pressure to flow through that area, that it remodels things in a way that's adverse. And once that's corrected, it takes a while for some physiologic and anatomic changes, but I could expect to even improve more. And indeed, I find now in the day, I can, when I'm just sitting at rest, I'm breathing through my nose and my mouth is closed. I never could do that before.
I could almost cry, Pam, because that's the dream. I love that for you. That's wonderful. Did you have to continue CPAP? Did you do another sleep study? What happened with that?
So we knew we would do a sleep study, and this one we decided to do in-house, a polysomnogram in the hospital. And it was, I'm trying to remember the exact timing after we got the palatal expander out, and then we waited a short time to just have everything kind of settle down to a new, you know, baseline.
Yep.
And I went in and had an in lab study. And
how did that go
night,
versus the home study? Did you sleep at all?
Well, it was terrible, to be honest. But I have found that different sleep centers have different ambiences. And I would really request that you find out which is the one that's like the high class hotel room and not your typical hospital ambiance.
My experience was not like a high class hotel room.
Yeah, neither was mine. It was anything but, and I don't want to belabor that, but what I told myself going in, despite all the challenges of the room and how, you know, it all went, this is really important and you just need to chill and do the best sleep you possibly can. This is really, really important to ignore all these external stimuli.
Yeah.
And that, in fact, even I think with the next day, although the official report wasn't out, the sleep doctor in the hospital who has to interpret it because it is hospital-based called my sleep doctor and said, you know, this is amazing. It's really a normal study. You got to let her know. And then the official word came out in a report probably within a week.
No sleep.
And I couldn't really believe it. I thought, well, you know, so I'll probably need to be, I can be off the CPAP a while and then I'll probably have to be tested again and get back on it. Right. That was what I assumed.
Yeah.
But she said, there's no reason to retest. I mean,
there's nothing to see here. Just go about your life, Pam.
Yes, that's what she said, and I still didn't believe it. I'm like, are you sure, Marilyn? Like, should I save this you know, machine?
Yeah.
No.
Well, wonderful. And so were you so delighted?
Yeah, I mean, I still am, like, smiling. I look at my bedside stand. There's nothing on it but a glass of water. It's in my glasses.
And you're sleeping well? You wake
up
refreshed and all that. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I actually now don't feel like, I just wake up and I'm not groggy. Now I can feel the difference. I didn't feel it on CPAP, but I feel it now. And I am so grateful. Sometimes I just find myself crying. You're like, oh my God.
Yeah. I totally understand that. I'm so grateful for you sharing your story with us. And I'm glad you had such a great result.
Yeah, I am. I'm I'm really hoping people can understand there's a process. It's not a direct line to get a result.
Yes.
You're right. You have to advocate for yourself. You have to do the deep dive. And don't just accept what somebody that you've been seeing says, you must do this. You know, really, really, really take the time, because no process is perfect and easy. As I said, I had an infection. I was, you know, there are challenges along the way. You know, it's hard to do the adjustments sometimes, but you just, there's so much you can get out of it.
Yeah. Give up is what you're saying.
Don't give up. Don't give up. That's exactly it. Don't give up.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time today.
You're welcome. And thank you for doing the good work you do.
Thanks so much for listening. I love hearing from you. If you'd like to be featured in an upcoming episode of the podcast, please email me at sleepapneastories@gmail.com. That's also the place to get in touch if you just want to say hi or ask a question. Alternatively, I'm over on Instagram. My handle there is sleepapneastories. If you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe or follow, rate and review wherever you listen. This really helps a wider audience find the episodes, and I really appreciate it.